May it please the court. The appellant parents submit that this case actually is a relatively simple one involving statutory interpretation. Statute in question is section 167.131. The concluding sentence in that statute indicates that subject to the limitations of this section, each pupil shall be free to attend the public school of his or her choice. That is a clear statutory mandate. The only pertinent limitation in the section, under the uncontroverted facts in the record, is that these pupils, these school-aged children of the parent appellants, reside in the city of St. Louis, a district that has been unaccredited for all relevant time to this case. It is a matter of record, it's a matter of judicial notice, that the territory of the St. Louis Public School District is adjacent to St. Louis County. It's a matter of record that the Clayton School District is and has been at all relevant times accredited, and that the Clayton School District.
But the question is not where they could attend. The question is who's going to pay for it.
That's exactly right. Coincidentally, these children admittedly already attend. This is a statutory mandate. It's a statutory scheme which, under the Missouri Constitution, it's the responsibility of the legislature to implement Article.
Let me ask you this, because your client's children were already attending the Clayton schools under the tuition contracts. So it says for each pupil resident therein. Let's assume just for the moment that your client's children were actually residents of the city and attending schools in the city at the time that the lack of accreditation was pronounced by the State Board of Education. Run me through how one would go about having one's child go to school in Clayton or some other district in the adjoining county. You would apply to the school district.
There is no regulation that implements the statute. The statute speaks to the right of the child to attend the school.
Yeah, that's really what I'm getting to, and that is, does each school district have some method or protocol for determining how it can? I mean, I assume that a school district would say, well, we've got so many empty seats, we could fill them, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm asking you, how does this happen? I mean, I assume Clayton had some empty seats because they sold them to your client's children.
I believe you are correct. The Clayton School District has been making seats available to pupils from the school district of Wellston for some time.
And then when they didn't get paid, they stopped. Because here's the other question. I guess under the statute that it makes reference to, the school district of Clayton is entitled then to be paid the teacher's incidental funds and a few other categorical things that are part of the foundation formula, and those are the ones that chip. But that's not $14,000.
I don't know what the number is, Judge.
You don't know.
We didn't get that far, but let me.
But the number is less than what Clayton says they need.
I don't know that that's the case. I don't think that's a matter
you don't
of
know. Okay. Well, here's my question in terms of the attendance and how state aid and the school district's own tax base is allocated. Let's assume for a moment that the school district of St. Louis spends $9,000 per pupil, and the school district of Clayton spends $14,000 per pupil. So if you stay with me here, you're going to move a kid from a $9,000 district to a $14,000 district. Does that kid have to bring with him $14,000? And if so, aren't we pulling out $5,000 that would otherwise be allocated to the kids left behind in the unaccredited school district?
The question of whether this statute, Judge Wolf, is wise is the prerogative of the legislature. I'm going to hearken back to the first question you asked and attempt to walk through the various questions you have posed within the framework of what I believe on behalf of the parents, the law requires us to analyze. And that is, first and foremost, the statute says that these children have the right, the parents do, given that they're minors, to select the school of their choice. So presumably, implicit in that is some sort of application process. Obviously, we take the position that the statute does not give the district any discretion to decline to participate in this program. Whether this system fits together as a cohesive whole, given that there are 26 school districts within the county, is, I submit, not a question for this court at this time.
But it says, but in subsection 2, it says, subject to the limitations of this section. What are the limitations of this section?
There's only really one. It's a categorical limitation. These children who reside in the city of St. Louis could not seek to go to Cole County districts. That's the limitation in this section.
So it's only a school district in an adjoining county, in the same county or an adjoining county?
City of St. Louis is obviously an exceptional circumstance in which there is no, the city of St. Louis is a county. Mm-hmm. There's only one school district in the city. The only mechanism affording the pupil residents of the city of St. Louis any relief from having being mired to an education that is deemed unworthy and therefore violative of Article 9, Section 1, is by creating this opportunity to go into an.
But St. Louis County is the only adjoining county to St. Louis City, and it's 26 schools. There's a lot of latitude there.
Yes. There's a lot of them to share the pain.
Assuming you're correct that 131 applies to this situation, isn't there an alternative way to read 167.151, that first sentence that gives meaning to both? It says, the school district of a school board of any district in its discretion may admit to the school pupils not entitled to free instruction and prescribe the tuition fee to be paid by them except as provided in 167.121. Can't you read that as saying that normally they can prescribe the tuition, but as Judge Wolf indicated, this statute sets out a specific 131 sets out a specific way you have to determine tuition. And that's what that cross reference means. It doesn't take from the receiving school districts the discretion to not admit other students.
That is not a logical reading of 167.151. I respectfully submit, Judge.
Why not?
Because
it says, and prescribe the tuition to be paid by them except as provided in the section that prescribes a different method.
That's exactly correct. If you were to follow that logic, then if you look at the statutory language of 167.131, there would actually be a direct conflict. Because section 167.131 expressly says the pupil has the right to go to the school of his choice.
But it doesn't say, and every district has to accept them, because this other one says they don't have to. I mean, as you point out, there's already strictures.
If you look at section 167.151, what it indicates is that only in 167.121 and 131 are these exceptions.
I understand your reading, but I disagree with you, I guess, that we can't look at the consequences of your reading of it, and because we assume the legislature was being rational and that they would set up a system where everybody could pick any one school district. They could all choose to go to Wellston or all choose to go to any one of the 96, whatever number of school districts there are in the county, would overwhelm that district. There wouldn't be seats, there wouldn't be rooms, there wouldn't be teachers, there wouldn't be any way to accommodate them or to provide an adequate education to anybody in that receiving district. If there's another way to read it that makes more sense, that actually could give effect to the intent that these students get to go to a school district which can teach them something, isn't that what we should do?
Well, I disagree with you that there is that what the interpretation that you pose of 167.151 would not set up a conflict with the direct language of 167.131, particularly given the history of the Burnett decision in 1934, the amendment of the 167.131 in 1935 to make it clear, to add this language indicating that each student shall have the right to attend the school of his or her choice. At that time, having the tail in it in 1935, it's expressly indicating that the school districts, this receiving accredited districts, have the right to decline to accept. And then 1993, the General Assembly removing that language indicating that the districts have the right to decline to participate in the 167.131 program.
But if you're a parent, if you're a parent and you want your child to have a good education, and without the ambiguities inherent in legislation, although we of course assume the legislature should be rational, the parent could, as under the Lochner courts, could contract. So these parents contracted without consulting the city to find out what they're going to pay. They contracted to make sure their children went to Clayton School District. That's their right to contract, without any consultation with who's going to pay it, and then ask the city, are you going to pay, or are you going to, you know, what's going on here? And then later on, they want to come back after they've contracted with Clayton, they send their kids to Clayton School District, we want you to pay now.
You know,
they could choose, they don't want to, a parent could choose not to have the city pay.
Judge Tideman, there are people who contract for annuities.
What?
There are people who contract for annuities, but when they reach Social Security retirement age, still accept the check. The practical reality is there's nothing in those contracts that indicates that at the time of the loss of accreditation, they would not avail themselves of the rights under 167.131.
But the point is, you're not attending under this, well, just related to that and answering, you're not attending under the statute, but under your contract.
At that time.
But are courts at liberty to disregard the terms of a contract, even where there may be potentially a statutory alternative for payment? I mean, your opponent has cited two cases saying, no, we're not at liberty to disregard the terms of the contract, albeit they're Court of Appeals cases from the early 50s.
Well, I think what those contracts indicate simply is that you cannot avail yourselves of the rights under the contract and then deny yourself having the corresponding obligations. This is a case in which these people have challenged in the trial court. They say that they're entitled to restitution because the record makes it clear the Clayton School District has refused to participate in the requirements of 167.131.
And when the Clayton School, I have two questions. One is, when the Clayton School District takes this child who's a resident of the city, does the city, which you say is the city board, which is required to pay for it, do they get credit under the state aid formula for having a child in their school?
You know, I do not know the answer to that, Judge.
Because otherwise, the payment for this is entirely assessed against the property tax base and that little bit of sales tax that supports the St. Louis schools.
May I respond?
Yeah.
I think that the symmetry of that is actually quite just. I mean, the practical reality is the St. Louis Public School District, as this court has acknowledged in 2008, has had this as a woeful history of educating children. It is now unaccredited. It's deemed unworthy by the state of Missouri. The practical reality is it's still enjoying the same tax base and taxpayer support that it ever did. To the extent that people are able or awakening to their rights under 167.131, consistent with the Missouri Constitution, to have their child receive an accredited education, it is logical that the money that is paid to the St. Louis Public School District to some extent should follow those children.
Right, but that doesn't set up that way, because it would seem pretty clear to me that if the child's attending school in Clayton, as these children are now, that they're counted in the Clayton count for state aid purposes, although Clayton only gets $100 or $200, whatever they get off the formula, whereas the city gets several thousand. So the state saves a lot of money under your theory, because they only have to pay a couple $100 of state aid to Clayton instead of $5,000 or $6,000 to St. Louis. Now, my second question, though, is if your resident children, the parents of resident children in the city of St. Louis, and they decide that they want their kid to go to school in Ladue, could they compel the school district of Ladue, I'm just taking it out of Clayton for a moment, just picking another one at random, to take that child?
Yes.
They can compel them. So I could show up, if I've got a kid and I live in the city of St. Louis and I've got a kid and I want him to go to Ladue High School, I show up at the Ladue High School and I say, I reside in the city and under this statute, I have a right to bring my kid here and you have an obligation to take them.
It's unquestionable.
Okay.
The practical reality is all the 26 districts in the St. Louis County have the same obligation under this statute.
But if they refuse to take your child, or they're just saying, we're already being paid, we're not billing the city, I mean, why isn't your suit against the city for refusing to pay Ladue or Clayton or whatever district you pick, as opposed to requiring that district here at Clayton to turn back your money and bill somebody else. You're saying Clayton's already being paid by you for your children, for your client's children attending. Why are you saying they have an obligation to turn that money back and bill somebody else if you're saying the city has to pay for wherever they want to go, and they're in fact going where they want to go? Why isn't your suit against the city to make them pay?
The suit is against the, are you but, talking about the transitional
school district? So why is it Clayton obligation to make somebody else pay?
We're following
the statute. They got their
money. First of all, under 167.151, I sense we disagree, but 167.151, all it's attempting to do is to make it clear that a district has discretion to set up a personal tuition payment program. For example, Ladue opts not to have one, and it simply says that that is a possible mechanism for a district anywhere in the state of Missouri to accept students who don't otherwise qualify as residents or otherwise to attend that district. The practical reality is here that because the Clayton School District has made it known since the beginning that it would not accept these kids under 167.131, and these parents wanted to have their children continue to receive an education in an accredited district, they have to follow the statutory, what we see as footsteps. We are attempting to follow a logical sequence that is consistent with the statute. The statute says the Clayton School District must prepare a special statutory tuition bill pursuant to 167.131. The transitional school district now...
Where is it that it says they have to do a special bill? What are you referring to?
In the...
it talks
rate
about
of,
the
rate of 167.131.2, the first sentence seems to imply that. The rate of tuition to be charged by the district, attended and paid by the sending district, is the per pupil cost. Whether you call it a bill, I don't think that the semantics really make a significant difference. The unquestionable sequence specified by the statute is that the
But you're saying if the city paid them $14,000, they would refuse to take that money and they wouldn't let the students attend?
We aren't there. I don't know.
Yeah. As I understand your argument is, if they won't bill them, in order to protect our rights, we paid the bill. Right.
I'm sorry.
As I understand your argument is, they say they won't take them, even though the statute says, and your only way to get them in the school is to say, I'm not obligated to pay, but I will. And so somebody owes me my money back. And somebody does, whether it's the city or Clayton, you're owed your money back.
Frankly, when I was framing this, I was just thinking about hitting all the major points.
Right. But there's no doubt, though, that the city is in this case. They've got a lawyer over there.
Right.
Right. Unless we get the Clayton School District in a sequential fashion, doing this sequentially, to follow the command of the statute to charge the sending district, i.e. the St. Louis Public School District, I haven't done my job as a lawyer to outline the case. Then we get the transitional school district succeeding to the responsibilities of the St. Louis Public School District in, because if that bill is prepared, what I perceive to be a bill under the mandate of 167.131.2, then it has to be paid. Who pays it? The transitional school district. That is the sequence that we see setting up under 167.131.
Thank you.
Good morning. Mark Bremer for the Clayton School District. You will also hear from the city district's lawyers, Mr. Walsh. Appellants are seeking declarations that my client, Clayton School District, must do certain things under 167.131. It must enroll their children in the first instance, although they took it out of their petition. That allegation or that requested declaration seems to keep reappearing in their brief. They further state that since the children are already in attendance, we must now treat them as attending pursuant to that statute. And then we must prepare and submit these special tuition bills to the city district. But nowhere in the statute does it say Clayton, as an adjoining district, must do any of those things. Nowhere does it say that it shall do any of those things, or that it is required to do any of those things, or any other mandatory terminology that the legislature knows well how to use.
What does it mean then when it says shall be free to attend the public school of his or her choice? What does that mean then?
Thank you, Judge. Again, it doesn't have any mandatory language. It says students shall be free to do something, and it has no mention whatsoever to the adjoining districts. Fairly construed, what that means is that the resident district, or the unaccredited district of residence, can't control the choice of where the kid wants to go with the approval of the adjoining district.
Well, where's the approval of the adjoining district in there? Doesn't that say shall be free to attend the public school of his or her choice apply both to the sending district and whichever other district the child chooses to attend?
I don't think that's a fair reading in light of the judicial gloss of the Burnett case, which says this statute doesn't impose any obligations on adjoining districts, and if the legislature wants to do it, they know how to say it. There is nothing in the legislative history of that provision.
If you say that, what does it mean then that each pupil shall be free to attend the school of their choice? That's got to mean something.
I do believe it clearly means freedom vis-a-vis the district of residence. The district of residence can't insist, like, well, you can only go to Riverview Gardens, you can't go to Clayton, because Riverview Gardens is a lot cheaper and will only pay for you to go to a lower cost
district. Well, but the legislature already fixed that. They already determined what the tuition was going to be without regard to where they went. And if you and the city got in a disagreement as to what the tuition would be, then even before we get to a court, it says the State Board of Education would decide. So clearly the legislature didn't intend the amount of tuition to have anything whatsoever to do with this statute.
The reality, Your Honor, is that that statutory formula, how to compute the amount that would be owed, will vary from district to district. We don't have the exact amount for Clayton. It was never done, but it would be a large number, say $10,000.
Has it ever been done?
It says the school attended. You use the sum for the school attended, so they recognize it will vary.
Whereas other school districts in St. Louis County have a much lower cost.
Not the school district attended, the school attended. So Clayton would have to break it down for that school. The teacher's salaries, the this, the that, those things the statute lists, right?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood the distinction you were drawing. But my response is still the same. It's going to be less costly at a high school, say, in another school district in St. Louis County than in, say, Clayton. And the point of that is that the unaccredited district of residence can't require the kid to go to a lower cost school.
One argument that I guess we'll ask the opposing counsel in rebuttal, but I wanted to ask you about is you say there's a conflict between this 131 and with Senate Bill 781 and the settlement. And this, what you were just talking about, was relevant to that because it, in fact, does say that under the voluntary program, you do go to particular schools, right, in particular areas, and says the state pays, not that the unaccredited district pays. Can you address that argument for me?
Thank you for asking. This is an issue that is very dear to my heart. I was the lead negotiator for all 24 county school districts in the St. Louis school desegregation case. I was the principal author of basically of the provisions in the DSEG settlement agreement that pertain to the county districts as well as others as well. I have since represented VIC, which heads up the transfer program, for the last decade, although I do not in this case. I just represent Clayton in this case. The settlement agreement is still very actively being implemented in the metropolitan area, including 8,000 students who are transferring from the city to the county today as we speak. This is my personal dog-eared copy of the governing documents regarding the DSEG settlement agreement. This consists of...
The 1999 agreement or the 1983 agreement?
The 99, Your Honor. This is for the 99 agreement. It consists of, because I have to consult these, I'm representing my client Vic, on an ongoing basis. This contains the legislature's words in Senate Bill 781. This contains the parties' words in their settlement agreement, which was authorized by the legislature. And it says that the Senate bill and the enactments made therein are subject to what the parties agree to. So this is authorized by our legislature. And then I have Judge Limbaugh's final judgment approving the entire plan. And that, too, was foreseen by, authorized by Senate Bill 781. This is a manifestation of our General Assembly's legislative intent. And it cannot be squared with appellant's construction of 167.131.
But did the legislature in 781 overtly draw an exception to this statute that your opposing counsel is relying upon? Or is it simply your argument that the 781 provisions, which became effective with the signaling that there was a settlement, are that they are simply inconsistent with them?
It's our position that you may look at Senate Bill 781, as well as the Safe Schools Act and the contracts, in order to address the appellant's interpretive issue. They say that notwithstanding there's no mandatory language in 131, it should be construed to contain mandatory language. And we are giving this, plus our other two reasons, the contract and the Safe Schools Act, as reasons why this court should not read in some unwritten mandatory requirement into 131. We are not asking that anything be repealed. This is a matter of legislative interpretation, and this court may look in pari materia at what some other statutes say, and we pointed them out. Senate Bill 781, Safe Schools Act.
The desegregation agreement aside, I assume that this 167-131 has been applied in various districts around the state, mostly smaller rural districts, that when they become unaccredited, then their children get shifted to adjoining school districts.
And yes.
How is that fundamentally different from what the plaintiffs are asking here?
If I understand your question, Your Honor, I think it is different because the city of St. Louis is a special case, and it may be under our law and constitution. And Senate Bill 781 has made it a special case. There is a trumping transfer program provided for in Senate Bill 781. And we're not asking that 131 be repealed, just that plaintiff's interpretation of it not be accepted, namely as imposing mandatory obligations.
But the transfer program under 781 is a transfer program that does classify by race, so that it's black students who go to school in the county district, white students from the county districts can attend schools in the city district.
That is correct. Yes.
So it's not an open-ended thing as this 161-131 would seem to be.
There are differences, and those differences are irreconcilable. Senate Bill 781 and the DSEG settlement agreement are to remedy a constitutional violation in the city of St. Louis, a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, unlawful segregation based on race. Therefore, as a perfectly appropriate remedy to undo the effects of that, you need to have a race-based program to do that. And that's why it is very important that under the plan, blacks go from the city and whites from the county to the city.
And would the interpretation of 161-131 that your opponent is espousing, would that be destructive of the desegregation settlement?
Absolutely.
Vic, in what way?
Yes.
In what way, he said?
It would create the possibility of further segregative acts if a large number of white kids leave the predominantly black city school district and go to predominantly white adjoining suburban school districts. That can be a new segregative act that would violate commitments that parties made in the
settlement agreement. Would it violate Judge Limbaugh's order? Because we have a supremacy clause, and it, all well and good about state statutes, but it was under the supervision of the federal district judge that this was done. And
That too, Your Honor. There is federal constitutional preemption of state law.
I take it that the bill or the settlement agreement does not specifically refer to 167-131.
Correct, because we never thought it would be urged that ever imposed a mandatory requirement. We didn't need to deal with it. It was then, and it should still remain discretionary, and then there's no issue, and plaintiffs don't have a claim. I'd like to give Mr. Walsh an opportunity.
I think he'd like one, too.
May it please the Court. My name is Rip Walsh. I represent the Transitional School District of the City of St. Louis, and I want to first address Judge Wolf's question about the school funding formula that he gave to my learned opponent, and that is whether or not the city would still be paid. And this really underscores a fundamental contradiction and why there is an incredible, unreconcilable inconsistency between 781 and 167-131, and that is under the school funding formula that this court just went into great detail with in the Committee for Educational Equality case, you set forth under Senate Bill 787 and Chapter 163 the method for how school funding is done. The first aspect of it is the average weighted attendance in that particular school, and then there's other modifiers to it and local participation, etc. But the very first thing is the weighted average attendance, as this court recognized. Now, under the petitioner's interpretation of this statute, what would happen is that students that chose to leave, to go to a different school district, this city would have to pay for them, even though they would not be funded by the state of Missouri for it.
Isn't that a policy decision that we let our legislature make? And follow what their clear guidance is and what they give us to decide?
I think, Your Honor, it's an impossibility provision. It's not a policy provision, because the way that is set up is Senate Bill 781 is specifically designed for if there is deaccreditation of the school. It's not something that didn't occur to them. They set up a specific procedure for how it would be deaccredited if it wasn't brought up to particular standards, what would happen, how they would affect the transfer of powers between the then board to the transitional school district and is run by the special administrative board, how it would operate during that term of unaccreditation, it would transfer back.
Right, but when they did it, I mean, we're presumed that they knew what their law was. When they passed that legislation, this 167-131 was sitting there. It was in the backdrop. Can't we assume that they wanted to leave that for a catch-all for those parents who had students for school districts that lost their accreditation? And if they didn't want this statute to apply, it certainly would have been easy for them to tell us that.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think they don't have to wipe out that particular statute, because theoretically, what if the city of St. Louis decided that it wasn't going to have high schools anymore? That's a possibility, and if it did, that statute could then apply. But with Senate Bill 781 sets up the specific formula by the mechanism for funding this from the state. And what the petitioners argue, it's just the opposite occurs, that the funding is by the district, that, as we said before, would have that twin spiral of not getting the funds from the state to pay for it and then not having the ability to fund it. That means that 781, the whole aspect of it would be destroyed, because there'd be no way.
You're saying it sets up an inconsistent system of how you react to a lack of accreditation?
Exactly, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
And when you look at the rules for applying the more specific statute over the more general one, you have to be able to find that Senate Bill 781 is more comprehensive, so it prevails over the general. It's an exception to the lesser developed rule, or it's a qualification of 137.
Let me ask you this. When the State Board of Education made its decision to take over the St. Louis, I mean, to unaccredit the school district and then subsequently to have the powers transferred to the Special Administrative Board, did the board in making its decision take account of the effect of 167-131? In other words, did they say, oh, if we do this, we could in effect depopulate the school district because everybody can flee to the suburbs and there won't be a school district left?
I don't believe they ever took that into account, Your Honor. I wasn't there, so I can't tell you if it was factually brought up. But the effect of this is to, in effect, destroy the city of St. Louis school system because it destroys the mechanism by which schools are funded. And so 781 that was enacted by the legislature after years of going through the desegregation program set up how you would act if the city schools became deaccredited.
But if you take Judge Fisher's point about the legislature knowing what it's doing, it may very well, you could, as I suppose the equal force, argue that, well, they left 131 in there with the hope that the State Board of Education would never unaccredit the St. Louis School District.
Well, that I don't know how that could make sense when there is an entire formula set up to be able to transfer it to the transitional school district for it to operate and then for it to be able to transfer back.
Well, it could be an incentive to the school districts to stay accredited, because if you're unaccredited, then you're going to really suffer tremendous financial loss.
Well,
is there a way to reconcile the two systems of how to act in the face of accreditation?
Well, I think
SB 781 sets up a different system, but opposing counsel, I'm sure, will address why he thinks we can apply both. So,
well, I don't think there is. I think they are inconsistent, and as such, the rule is the more specific and the latter overrules the more general or the older statute. But in particular, 167-131 talks about an unaccredited school. And what happened in Senate Bill 781 is an unaccreditation of a district. 167-131 says if you have a district that does not have an accredited school, and we do have accredited schools. I do want to take issue with my learned opponent's statement that the schools are woeful in the city of St. Louis, because we have students and excellent teachers, that students that attend the finest universities in the United States and elsewhere. Do they need work? Absolutely. But the mechanism that the state legislature set forth to bring those up to bear, to improve them, is Senate Bill 781. The effect of this would be to destroy that. It's not to help them. It would destroy it because it removes the funding of it.
Are there any further questions?
To that point, the statute 167-131 says an accredited school. Is that the same as an accredited school district? Because I take your point that there are schools in the city of St. Louis that are doing a fine job of performing their educational mission, and there are some that are not. So the question is, does that affect every school in the district, or does it just affect a particular school?
Well, Your Honor, at some point, the DESE went to accrediting districts as opposed to individual schools. Mm-hmm. We have an affidavit by Dan Edwards that was uncontested that we do have accredited schools in the city of St. Louis.
Yeah, but they're not accredited by the State Board of Education, and doesn't 131.1, if it applies, say that's the accreditation you look to?
Well, I don't believe that they review them individually. So, you know, it's not that there's a yes or no, it's that there wasn't an application to it. But the statute talks about unaccredited schools. And I haven't seen, there's no case that talks about it applying to a district, which at the worst means that there's something equivocal about the statute. And if it is, the latter statute of Senate Bill 781 must prevail over a ambiguous previous statute.
And the effect, though, of the current system is that children whose parents have the financial ability to pay for it are the ones who leave the St. Louis system and leave behind those whose parents don't have the ability to pay the tuition of another school.
Well, I do agree that when there are people of means and have the ability to pay for tuition in private schools or in public schools that accept other students like the petitioners here, they do have that ability, and others of limited means are going to be restricted from doing that if there isn't a scholarship or something else that's available to do it. But the point is, Your Honor, there's no this reference that there's a constitutional right, as my learned opponent said, to education in an accredited school. This court just dealt with the right, whether or not there was a fundamental right to an adequate education, and you didn't talk about an accredited education. In fact, when the constitutional provisions in Missouri were enacted, there was no such thing as an accredited school because that enactment didn't even come up. And clearly, if this court believed there was a constitutional right to an education that is accredited, then they wouldn't permit schools to go on in an unaccredited fashion and be improved and be redone so that they can continue to operate. It'd have to stop immediately.
Are there any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
What does it mean to be unaccredited, and are there schools in the city that are accredited?
There's no such thing. The entire district is unaccredited.
So Metro High School would be an unaccredited high school?
I believe Metro High School is part of the St. Louis Public School District system, and yes, it's unaccredited. There's no Judge Teitelman, I believe that is the case. I believe that the legislative framework makes it abundantly clear that to the extent that 167.131 talks about accredited schools, the evolution of the corresponding statutes makes it absolutely clear that you go district by district. It is what the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education says, and I believe that this court's decision in 2008 involving the St. Louis Public School District answers the question. It says it's unaccredited. It talks about the woeful history of education.
Is there a prior case that's applied a 167.131 to a whole unaccredited district? Didn't come up that we know of.
No, I don't think it has come up. However, we do know how the Clayton School District reacts to it. Clayton School District reacts to 167.131 as in the context of Wellston.
Well, didn't they react that it was their option and they chose to do it and then chose not to do it?
That's what they say now.
Well, they quit doing it, right?
Pardon me?
They quit admitting Wellston students when they didn't get paid.
No, that's not true.
No, okay.
No. Okay. Students who were from Wellston continued to attend, and the Clayton School District continued to dun the Wellston School District during dependency of this case. The practical reality is that if you allow this pick-and-choose mechanism to exist.
Do they get paid by Wellston? Have they been paid by Wellston?
I believe, again, it's not a matter of full record. It's not our fight. We believe that the record indicates that they have at least partially been paid. And in fact, the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education weighed in on the side of the Clayton School District and sent dunning letters to the Wellston School District.
And they can you address what's obviously a key issue, and you didn't get a chance because of our questions to address before, which is Senate Bill 781. Opposing counsel says it's a direct conflict because it has an entirely different method of dealing with the situation of accreditation, which is very different, as a different payor and a different way of sending students.
In the parents' view, that argument highlights the conundrum that the respondents set up. They're asking this court to sit as a super legislature and to imagine hobgoblins.
It is an inconsistent system. Why doesn't it apply? Why is this still valid?
Because what it deals with is segregation. It is a remedy for segregation. It does nothing to directly address what the Missouri statutory framework obviously concentrates on, which is what to do in the case of a district's loss of accreditation, what you do with those students who are shorn.
So are you saying, but it does specifically deal with transfers in a different way if the city district becomes unaccredited of black students. So you're saying this is for white students and that's for black students? That specifically says what to do in this situation, but it limits the remedy.
That's exactly right. But
it doesn't say, or you can pick 131. I mean, isn't there an implicit preemption? Why set that up if there's something else?
Pardon me? I didn't
hear. As to at least those who are covered by 781, isn't there implicit preemption of 167.131 by this alternative later enacted method?
No, I don't think so. Because the evils that the two systems are intended to address are completely discrete. You have a situation where you have loss of accreditation, a deemed unworthiness of education that would violate the legislature's interpretation and implementation of Article 9, Section 1. We do not argue there is a direct constitutional right to an accredited education. To the contrary, we heed what this court has repeatedly said, that is that the legislature's responsibility to speak to how you implement that constitutional mandate. It has done that in 167.131. To the contrary, the Missouri General Assembly simply cooperated in passing Senate Bill 781 to deal with a more limited, discrete problem, not insignificant problem, mind
you. But the same factual situation of an unaccredited St. Louis school district was specifically dealt with in Senate Bill and had an alternative inconsistent remedy.
If you believe that those are inconsistent.
So tell me why they're not. I understand you're saying that the purposes of an original enactment may have been different, but why isn't the result inconsistent?
It's not at all inconsistent. Okay. Because the very people, the 25% of the African-American pupils who are so fortunate as to be able to participate in the voluntary transfer system and escape the St. Louis Public School District, which is now unaccredited, only those people are able to participate. They have to be fortunate. If you accept their interpretation, what you do is you set up an argument, a situation in which there's an equal protection violation. If you're Bosnian, if you're white, if you're Latino, you have no rights under the voluntary transfer program. To the contrary, to the extent that this court would follow the clear statutory mandate of 167.131, everybody has a remedy.
So it would be unconstitutional, for instance, to get rid of 167.131 or to say it does not apply explicitly if they were to amend it and say it does not apply to St. Louis City.
Nobody here is arguing that I've never heard a respondent argue that 167.131 is unconstitutional.
No, I thought you were saying it would be unconstitutional not to provide a way for other students in the city to transfer, but they certainly had no ability to do so prior to that lack of accreditation.
I am saying that if 167.131 is deemed to be preempted only as to the mm-hmm. city of St. Louis under the respondent's interpretation of Senate Bill 781, you are making Senate Bill 781 the engine of unconstitutionality. You're violating a whole slew of residents' equal protection rights. That is not sensible because under our interpretation of 167.131, even that 25% of the African-American students who are so fortunate as to be accepted into the voluntary transfer program still get to get out. They get out through the 167.131 portal, and I respectfully disagree that there's a supremacy clause problem. It is a hobgoblin. These are separate situations. I do not think a federal court would view the proper interpretation and implementation of Section 167.131 as being, in effect, a violation of that consent decree.
One question concerning numbers. They seem to suggest there's just going to be an overrun of people that try to go to Clayton, and it's going to be a huge depletion. Does the record here show anyone other than your clients that are trying to get the city school district to pay for their education at Clayton?
The record is silent as to that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Case is taken under submission.